It is the first ever free-for-all Friday, where you never know what you're going to get. So let's take a closer look.
Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
T-G-I-F, thank goodness it's Friday. I'm Trent Horn, Catholic apologist and speaker and host of the Council of Trent podcast. And because of your support of the podcast, we're able to expand and offer it on multiple days now, trying to put out more content that edifies you, builds you up, makes you a better Catholic, a better human being in the world to help spread the truth about God's love. But sometimes we just need a little break from theology. It's wonderful a subject it is in apologetics to just learn about interesting things in the world, because truth is always a good thing. Why not learn things that are true, grow in our knowledge about the world, and have a little fun while we do it? So that is my debut for a new show here on the Council of Trent. I'll be offering you what I call Free for All Fridays. The only rule here is we'll talk about anything that's out there, but I have to find it interesting, something that I have an interest in. It's just a weird, unusual thing, whatever it may be, something that I'm interested in and would love to talk to you about. And I hope that you might be interested in some of these subjects as well. And feel free on our podcast at trenthornpodcast.com. Go there and leave under the comments section if you have other topics you're interested in what I think about for a free-for-all Friday. And it could be anything. The sky's the limit. So as I said, the ones that I'm going to pick are things that I find interesting. And as you can imagine, from someone who's an apologist who does a lot of reading, a lot of studying, I come across all kinds of different subjects. Today, I want to talk about crew resource management. What in the world is that? It's also called CRM. And why am I interested in something like this? Well, much to my wife's chagrin, especially when I have to travel or when she has to go on an airplane, I watch a lot of documentaries about airplane crashes. I find them fascinating because what happens in most airplane crashes is that it's a series of events or failures that build and build upon one another that reach a fatal, critical, no turning back point. And then, you know, the plane crashes and, you know, bad things happen after that, of course. So crew resource management, where does that come in? Well, it came out of a series of airplane crashes that occurred in the 1970s, that the FAA was studying this, and that in the 1970s, a large percentage, I think the majority of airplane crashes were caused not by mechanical failure, not by weather, they were caused by pilot error, and specifically errors that were occurring when pilots and co-pilots and engineers in the cockpit were not communicating well with one another, that led to these disasters and spurred the creation of this new kind of psychology and communication tool that is now called, at first it was called cockpit resource management, but people have found that it applies to anywhere where you have people working together that can turn into a life or death situation, whether it's astronauts or in the military or firefighting, whatever it may be. So it went from being cockpit resource management to crew resource management, or CRM. So these were the disasters that spurred the development of CRM. First, one of the earliest ones was Eastern Airlines 401. This is a plane that crashed outside of Miami International Airport December 29th. 1972. Here's what happens. A flight took off from New York and was preparing to land in Miami when the indicator light for the front landing gear failed to illuminate. So the pilot, the co-pilot, and the engineer didn't know if the landing gear had deployed properly. The light didn't turn on. Now, it could have been a burnt out fuse, and it turns out it actually was. The bulb was just broken. They even did a procedure called the Christmas tree, where this is back in the 70s, of course, so they just manually turned on every light in the cockpit, and the light didn't turn on. They're like, well, we still can't be sure. Let's try to figure out, do we need to screw the bulb in more? Do we need to go down and see if the gear is down? So the pilot set the plane on a holding pattern at 2,000 feet. It's circling Miami International, 2,000 feet at a holding pattern. Things are going fine until the pilot turns back to talk to the engineer, and he knocks the stick forward ever so slightly, the control column. And this disengages the autopilot, and causes the plane to descend very, very slowly, so slowly it was imperceptible to the cabin crew. And it was night, and this was night over the Everglades outside of Miami. So there's no visual reference points for them to see. There's no lights or anything like that for them to see that they were descending. So the plane is going down, and everyone in the cockpit is consumed with trying to figure out whether the landing gear is down or if there was a problem with the light. They're all trying to fix the light in the landing gear. Nobody's paying attention to the altimeter. In fact, a warning chime goes off at the engineer's station. The warning chime goes off saying that they're descending, they're losing altitude, but he doesn't hear it. Why? Because he's down in the wheel well trying to see if the gear has been dropped. And then I think they discover they're about to crash like 10 seconds before they hit the Everglades, this tall sawgrass, and then they hit it, though, and it was a horrible catastrophe. A lot of people died in it. People died of their injuries later. It was gruesome what happened. And actually, there were a few guys there, you know, just some guys out frog hunting. You know, they're hunting frogs and stuff in the middle of the night on their airboat. And they saw the plane go down. They were one of the first people there. And they saved a lot of the crew and passengers who might have died in a fire or were strapped in their seats and almost drowned in the swamp. And it's all this happened because no one's paying attention in the cockpit. Similar thing happens a few years later, United Airlines Flight 173. This was December 28th, 1978. I don't know if that's a coincidence or not that these are happening. You know, I guess, I don't know. So here's what happens. United Airlines Flight 173, they were flying towards Portland. They left Denver, heading to Portland. And they noticed that there were these unusual vibrations when they were trying to prepare to land. And they had a weird sensation of yaw. So there's pitch, roll, and yaw. That's how a plane moves on the different vertical axes. So when the plane kind of just tilts up or down, that would be pitch. When it tilts left or right, that would be roll. And yaw is just kind of when it turns level. So yaw is like how you turn in a car right or left. A plane can turn and maintain a level altitude in the same way. So that was odd, and they didn't see the indicator on the landing gear. Once again, they're worried about the landing gear problem. So everyone's trying to figure this out. They're trying to diagnose the problem. But this case, unlike Eastern Airlines 401, United Airlines Flight 173, it was not the altimeter that was the problem. They were maintaining proper altitude. It was the fuel. Nobody was watching the fuel gauge. And the fuel is continually being burned. And then they ran out of fuel 6 miles from the Portland airport, and they crashed. I mean, still, there were fatalities, not nearly as many as the Eastern Airlines incident. Two crew members and 8 passengers died. And this is actually pretty common with planes that run out of fuel and crash. You're more likely to have survivors because you don't have any fuel to catch on fire. You burned it all up. In fact, that's why when planes have to make emergency landings, they tend to dump fuel, so they have less stuff to catch on fire. So what happened in these situations, you've got capable individuals who could solve the problem, but they are not achieving clear communication. You don't know who's in charge. You don't know who's supposed to be monitoring the system. And you're losing situational awareness. So that's the biggest problem here. And this is a huge problem, whether you're flying a plane, you're piloting a ship, or driving a car, whatever it may be. We get into accidents when we lose situational awareness, when you are not aware of events happening as they are happening. You've been checked out for some reason. So that's one problem here. Everyone's distracted. They've lost situational awareness. The other problem is that sometimes, though, people are aware. The first officer, an engineer, they'll be aware that there is a problem, but they don't communicate it in a direct way to the captain or the person who is in charge in order to make sure the problem is averted or that it's solved. This happens in all kinds of contexts. I said, you know, I'll talk about a firefighting example here in a little bit. Hospital rooms, surgery. You know, you have the head physician, you've got the person who's got all the experience, and a nurse who might want to speak up and think that something's wrong, but you don't want to be chewed out by the head surgeon or the head doctor because, you know, they've got all the experience, right? The same thing happens in plane crashes. You look at the 1982 Potomac crash. The plane, it didn't have enough speed to take off. It hadn't been iced over, I think. Crashed in the Potomac River. I think almost everyone was killed in that. And the transcript of the flight, you hear the first officer sees something is wrong. They're not getting up to speed, or there's something wrong with the flaps. So here's the transcript. First officer says, that's not right. The captain says, yes, it is. There's 80. That's the speed. No, I don't think it's right. Maybe it is. Captain says, 120. I don't know. First officer is concerned about a problem. They could still abort takeoff, but he's not willing to speak up to contradict the captain, and that can lead to disasters. So crew resource management, what it does, it's a tool that builds communication in a situation, helps people, keeps them from losing situational awareness, helps them in their decision-making. And you can use this, like I said, in hospital settings, whatever it may be. Todd Bishop has written on crew resource management, and he outlines a 5-step plan for how a subordinate would ask someone in charge to reveal that there is a problem. First, there's the opener. You say, you try to get their attention, like, you know, hey, Captain, Chief, Steve, Doctor. You want them to have your attention. You don't want to just say whatever it is because they might just ignore it. Then state your concern. I'm worried about that we're going to run out of fuel. I'm worried that the patient is going to go into shock. I'm worried that this ceiling is going to collapse as part of the rescue effort. Then you state the problem as you see it. So here's what I'm concerned about. I am worried about this. I am worried about this. Then the third step is because here's the problem. I'm worried about this because we're losing fuel because we're encountering a headwind, and the way we have the flaps, we're burning fuel faster than we thought. I'm worried about the patient going into shock because there's this thing on their chart that could contraindicate the treatment. I'm worried about this structure because these kinds of things collapse a lot. I've seen it before. So open, get their attention, state your concern, state the problem as you see it. Here's what I'm worried about. Here's why I'm worried about it. Then state a solution. Just don't ask for permission. Don't demand, but say, we should do this. Let's divert course. I think we should do this instead. I recommend that we do this. So you're not demanding, but you're not saying, hey, I was wondering, do you think maybe we should do this? It has to be a bit more assertive than that. And the final step is buy-in, obtain buy-in. You'd say something like, well, does that sound good to you? So the idea here is you're proposing, we need to do this, we should do this, but acknowledging they're the ones who make the call because they're the person who's in charge. They're the captain, they're the head firefighter, the head doctor, whatever it may be. And you want their buy-in. Does that sound good to you? So I'll give you two other examples of CRM where it's been a breakdown and led to disaster, and one where it actually worked really, really well. These are two that really stick out at me. And if you can't tell, I'm that weirdo who goes on Wikipedia late at night and goes to lists like worst industrial accidents in history. When you're a Catholic apologist, you just need to acquire knowledge from all different kinds of areas. And when you take a break from theology, you're still acquiring knowledge. It's just strange, oddball kind of knowledge that you acquire. Here are the two that really stick out to me. One is Air France Flight 447. Actually, I've been talking about planes a ton. I'll get to Air France 447. But here's a non-air one, the 1988 Hackensack Ford dealership fire. So this was in 1988, a Ford dealership in New Jersey catches fire in the service bay. 5 firefighters are inside. I think 100 are outside. Has a truss bow ceiling. Those are prone to collapse. They make the call. It's too dangerous. Try to get the guys out. They don't get out in time. The ceiling collapses. 3 firefighters are killed instantly. 2 guys are trapped in a cinder block storage area. They're trapped and there's no way to get them in, or they can't get in or out themselves. I mean, if some guys came from the outside, they could probably bust through a wall and get them out of there. They could bust through an exterior wall. And these 2 firefighters are calling on their radio. They called 27 times for rescue and nobody came. Some people heard them, passed them off. Nobody knows where they're supposed to go. Nobody knows if they've been rescued or not. One of the head guys who's supposed to be monitoring the radio, you look in a picture and you can see his radio is slung over his back. He's fighting the fire instead of monitoring the radio. And then the guys ran out of oxygen and they suffocated in there and they died. And it's a tragedy. They didn't have to, that there was not clear channels of communication and protocol established to prevent something like that from happening. And so that was something I was actually reading in a technical write-up on how crew resource management is used in firefighting contexts. So that's one. The other one is Air France 447. This one fascinates me because it's a very recent one. It was within the last 15 years. The airplanes, we've gotten way safer with them. I can barely remember the last time a major domestic carrier, even a major international carrier, went down. Air France 447 is a weird one because it basically disappeared over the Atlantic Ocean. It was leaving, I think it was leaving from Rio de Janeiro, and it was on its way to Paris, disappeared over the Atlantic Ocean. That's just bizarre. Planes just don't drop out of the sky like that. In fact, the middle of the flight is the safest part of the flight. The most dangerous parts of flying are the takeoff and the landing. In the middle of the flight, you're usually really good, but it just disappeared. People were wondering, well, what happened? It turns out, here's what happened. The captain went to sleep because it's the safest part of the flight, transatlantic flight, left the first officer and the second officer in charge. And the first and second officer hadn't clearly determined who was in charge of the plane. Then they got spooked because the autopilot disengaged because the speed sensor had malfunctioned. The plane did not know how fast it was going. They hit weather that iced up these things called the pitot tubes, P-I-T-O-T, pitot tubes. The tubes iced up. If you look on a plane, next time you get on a plane, look underneath the window of the cockpit. You'll see some tubes sticking out. Those are sensors. They measure how fast the air is going. That tells the computer how fast the plane is going. These tubes had iced up in the weather. They couldn't know how fast they were going. So they freaked out. And what happened, I mean, you could watch any documentary. Just search Air France 447 documentary. Goes into great detail. The second officer started pulling up on the stick. He wanted to go up. And they hit a stall. And they couldn't figure out why they were stalling. So you see, when a plane climbs too high, the air is too thin, it loses lift and it starts to fall. Now, when you're in a stall, they teach you in pilot training 101, you recover from a stall by putting the angle of attack, angling the plane's nose down. And the first officer did that. He angled the nose down, but he didn't tell the second officer, who was simultaneously pulling back on his stick, angling up. So they counteracted each other. Now, this was on an A320. There's two big kinds of jet manufacturers, Boeing and Airbus. I prefer Boeing, but I'm an American guy, so what do you expect? Airbus is very popular in Europe, and there's a lot of Airbuses here in the U.S. Whenever I'm in Europe, I'm always on a big Airbus flying around. The Boeing planes have a control stick column, traditional column in front of the pilot. When it moves synchronized with the co-pilot's control column. They move in tandem. On the Boeing, you just have a joystick, basically. It's not synchronized to the other joystick. So the second officer of Air France 447 is pulling back. The first officer is pushing forward. He doesn't understand. He's pushing forward. They're not getting speed. They're canceling each other out. They weren't communicating with each other to determine how to solve the problem. And so as it happens, and the captain comes back, tries to diagnose it, figures out what's wrong, but too late, and the plane ends up just... it falls like a rock into the Atlantic Ocean and everybody died. Once again, a failure of communication and crew resource management. But I will leave this on a high note. I bet you're thinking like, man, are you ever scared to fly on a plane? Well, no. No, I'm not, because I know planes statistically are very, very safe. I'm much more likely to be killed driving to the airport, frankly. So no, I'm not. And CRM and these advances in safety have made planes really safe. Even a while ago, even... what would it be now? 99, 09. 30 years ago. 30 years ago, CRM helped to keep a disaster from becoming a total disaster. So I'll leave you on this to show it's how, when it's employed, it can work very well. July 19th, 1989. A McDonnell Douglas DC-10 is flying. The DC-10 was an odd plane. It had engines under the wings, two engines, and it had an engine in the tail. An engine in the tail section. And so it exploded. There was a malfunction in the tail engine. It exploded. It severed the hydraulic lines. The plane was crippled. The pilots, the cockpit crew, called McDonnell Douglas saying, what do we do? They're trying to call to get advice. The plane's crippled. They're barely flying it. Okay, what do we do? They call them, and maintenance says, there is no protocol. We can't tell you what to do because we never imagined something like this would happen. That the planes, the hydraulic lines, the fuel lines, severed. They've lost almost complete control, trying to figure out a solution. Now, there was actually a DC-10 instructor on this flight with them. It was a guy who trains people how to fly these planes. So he was brought up to the cockpit. They all worked together, and they were working together like clockwork. When you look at the transcript, at one point there were 31 communications per second. They are constantly saying, here is what I am doing. Do you recommend this? Yes, I recommend that. Do this. That will not work. Okay, try this instead. They are communicating perfectly as a team, and then bring the plane down, and it crash lands in Sioux City, Iowa. So you look up Sioux City crash landing. It's a famous, you've probably seen it before. It's where the plane lands and then the tail goes up and there's a fireball. What's amazing, you look at that footage, you think everybody has died. But miraculously, 185 of 296 people survived that crash. So many lives were lost, but if they had not worked together like they did, it is all but certain everyone on that plane would have perished if they had not worked together and applied principles like crew resource management that day. So that is CRM. I find it interesting. And in your own life, who knows? You probably have to work with difficult people. You probably have to make important decisions. Maybe you fly a plane. Maybe you do something where it's life or death. Or maybe you just make important decisions. And this might be helpful. In fact, I think this CRM stuff, it might be helpful in the church where we may be afraid to confront a superior when we need to say this is something very important. Given the light of recent scandals, maybe we need some training like this to help people to not let superiors lose sight of their situational awareness. For example, like with modern CRM training, captains are taught to not belittle first officers and second officers, those who are their subordinates. They're taught not to belittle them when they make a mistake, not saying, Joe said we should have done this, and rookie here got it wrong. You don't do that, because if you publicly humiliate them, the next time there is a problem, they're less likely to speak up, and then that could lead to disaster. You want to give subordinates and those who are growing and learning in a field times to learn, time to make mistakes, but always be able to have valuable input to give to those who are veterans, because sometimes when you're a veteran, sometimes when you're an expert, you get sloppy because you've done it so many times. And then that's when a disaster happens, when your sloppiness overlaps with some kind of other critical failure. So once again, something interesting, check it out online. You can search crew resource management if you want to watch some just interesting instructional videos. And I hope you liked this. And once again, go to trendhornpodcast.com, comment on this episode. And if you've got other random things you'd like me to look into and talk about, if it's random enough and weird enough, I might just like it. I might just talk about it here on Free for All Friday on Council of Trent Podcast. So thank you guys so much, and God bless.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trenthornpodcast.com.